Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on milk. The milk of human kindness is not pasteurized when we come back. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, for instance. Swinton, then the preeminent New York journalist, probably one night in 1880 had this to say. He was the guest of honor at a banquet which was given to him by the leaders of his craft. He was a journalist. And someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. Well, Swinton outraged his colleagues when he said that there's no such thing at this date of world's history, in America at least, as an independent press. You know it and I know it. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinion out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. He went on to say that the business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. You know it, and I know it. And what folly is this toasting an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We are the jumping jacks. They pull the strings, and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Well, that's quite a statement, wouldn't you say? Well, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of this Global 2000 program, the New World Order, the men and families like the Windsors and the Rockefellers, the Bushes, the Bundys, the Carnegies and Vanderbilts and so on. That's why I contend that it's time for us to wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, these philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and this Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000 Bible Prophecy and the New World Order, why don't you call and order my 4-hour compact disc package. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Now, best of all, it's free of charge. Remember, it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, it's free. So why don't you call right now, the number's 417-273-4967 to order yours. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org, click onto the email, send an email request. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, this week we've been reviewing a book called The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized. It's kind of a revolutionary concept. Raw milk. I drank raw milk half most of my life. For about 20 years, I drank pasteurized, homogenized milk. I left the ranch in 1964. From 64 to 84, a period of 20 years, I drank pasteurized, homogenized milk. In 1984, I was diagnosed with atherosclerosis. It had plugged up about 80% of my arterial capacity. An electrocardiogram, and they said that I needed, at that time, it was bypass surgery, 1984. I happened to be going to a doctor. He was a medical doctor, a naturopath, and a chiropractor, and I asked Lester one time, I says, Lester, it's unusual that a man would have all three professions, you know, chiropractor, the medical doctor, and naturopath. Why are you all three? Well, how did that come about? That's very unusual. And I said, well, after World War II, he was shot down in Germany. He was a P-51 fighter pilot. He got shot down, and he survived the crash. He didn't bail out. He crashed the airplane, belly landed it or something, and then he got busted up pretty bad. And he was in the hospital for a couple of years, recovering from his injuries. And he said he couldn't do anything again. He couldn't work. His body was just a broken mass of protoplasm. He said, I had to do something. So under the GI Bill, I went to college, and then I went on to medical school. Got out of medical school, and he said, well, I could do that. You know, I could sit in an office here, you know, and tell people to, you know, take the pills that I was pushing at them. But he said, by 1953, he said, I noticed that I was killing a lot of people. Yeah, he said, I noticed I was killing a lot of people. Now, he went to college and medical school from 45. I think he was in there 8-9 years. And he gets into the medical practice in 1953, 54, along in there. And he said, I decided I needed to do something a little different. So he went to chiropractic school for 2 years and became a chiropractor. He had the medical background for it. So he went to the chiropractic school. And he said, that was pretty good. That was pretty good. But he said, I couldn't treat people with cancer as a chiropractor. And he said, I really developed an interest in cancer. But he said, I didn't know enough to cure anybody of cancer. So he went to naturopathy school. He became a naturopath. That was another two years. So that by 1957, he now had all three tickets. He settled in Ontario, Oregon, and that's where I met him, over in Ontario, Oregon. And then he looked at me and he said, hey, how come? Or he asked me how long I'd had that pain in my heart, and I told him. And he sent me in for an electrocardiogram, and sure enough, found out that I had heart disease. The medical doctor there said, you need bypass surgery. Now, they put me on raw cow's cream. I thought it was crazy at the time. I heard about butter and cream and milk and smoking and all that. And he said, well, you know, you can go get that Roto-Rooter job if you want. And at that time, it was only $50,000 back in the early 80s. Now it's over $100,000 for one of those bypass. He said, you can do that, but you'll be an invalid like I am for the rest of your life. Now, if you want to live your life as an invalid, why, bypass surgery is for you. And if you want to live a normal, healthy life, well, then you need to get that plaque out of your veins, and you need to do that naturally. So I said, well, let me give it a shot. So he put me on raw cow's cream. Just happened that here in Missouri on the farm, we had a cow, and so I took one cup of raw cow's cream a day, along with my chelation therapy. And in 90 days, it had cleared out one-third of the plaque in my arteries. Now, that was according to the electrocardiogram heart specialist. One-third in 90 days. He was really curious. He said, what is Lester giving you? And I thought, well, God, no Lester over here. Maybe he's giving me something that's illegal, you know. In the medical world, you got to be careful about getting these doctors into trouble or alternative therapists into trouble because, you know, the medical monopoly comes along. And that's what we were reading about here, monopoly. It's follow the money. It's monopoly. That's where oleomargarine came in. You see, oleomargarine, or these butter substitutes over here, are done for money. It's to make profit. There was nothing wrong with butter. It's that we could produce a synthetic butter cheaper. Then the dairymen get in there and say, well, my God, they're coming in here taking our business. Doctors are very sensitive to that. You know, everybody is very sensitive to market share. You ever notice that? Plumbers are very sensitive to market share. They don't want unlicensed people fixing other people's pipes. That's why they want licensing. It's to protect a monopoly. So when we get right down to it, politics is really the business of monopoly. It's the business of money. That's what we're really after, is money. So here we are looking at the greasy counterfeit. And back in the 1870s and 80s, there was a big fight over this thing of butter versus oleomargarine. And the fight in Congress made it clear that this was not a nutritional issue at all, but an economic issue. And as pointed out by Young, one man in a single factory could make more margarine than all of the butter that all the New York dairy farmers could produce put together. So a Chicago representative claimed that the bill to tax oleomargarine was a blatant attempt to revive the drooping dairy interests. The drooping dairy interests had indeed brought the bill about. Farming was greatly depressed, and the dairy industry was justifiably concerned about the impact of this new butter substitute called oleomargarine. The defenders of oleomargarine pointed out that new inventions often cause the demise of the old, and they claimed that this was a great invention, a modern science, and should not be obstructed because of dairy interests. And they even went so far as to claim that oleomargarine was better than butter. Doctors are now telling their patients the same thing in the 1980s and in the 21st century. Dr. Charles F. Chandler, a medical professor from Columbia College of Medicine, even went so far as to testify that margarine was butter made by a safe new process. Replying to this, Senator Palmer called oleo the monumental fraud of the 19th century. Now, with remarkable prescience presence, which has only begun to approach today or be appreciated today, Dr. D. E. Salmon, chief of the Bureau of Animal Husbandry, said that an invention like oleomargarine, which introduces a radical change to the manufacture of an article of food which goes on the table of every family in the land, might produce an unprecedented and remarkable effect on the public health. So now they brought up the public health issue. Salmon had sounded a very wise and justified word of caution, but it added to the hysteria among the defenders of butter. Witnesses testifying before the House Committee asserted dead horses, dead cows, and even dead dogs when they had been shot for hydrophobia and other carcasses of the city were taken to a rendering establishment where the great bulk of these things were made into pure oleo oil. Dr. Thomas Taylor of the Department of Agriculture suggested that margarine factories might be the destination for drowned sheep and for hogs dead from cholera and from a diet of distillery swill. A North Carolina congressman said that margarine was the sort of carrion that only jackals and turkey buzzards reveled in. Well, I got to pause here for a moment because that's what we're doing today with this product called bypass protein. We can take dead animals, like here on the farm, when an animal dies, you call the rendering company. They come out and pick up the dead animal, and they haul it off, and they butcher it out, and they run it into a steam kind of a thingy over here and cook it up, and they get this glop, and then there's this oil that comes off of it, fat, you know. And, of course, it's sterile. I mean, this fat that comes off of here, it's the intestines of hogs and cows and horses and sheep and dogs and cats, all these dead animals. What happens when you euthanize an animal in the pound? Well, they got to dispose of that animal, so it goes to the renderer. And the renderer takes it and renders it down. And then they feed it back to cattle and pigs and so on to boost the protein content of the feed. You see, in the scripture, God instructs us to let the land rest once every 7 years. Well, you know, we're modern, we're up to date, we're science-oriented people, you know, and we know that we don't have to do that. We can take chemicals from chemical byproducts from the industrial process of making or rendering crude oil down, and we can make chemical fertilizers. So we do. And we make these chemical fertilizers so we don't have to let the land rest. And if we let the land rest once every 60 or every 6 years, you know, every seventh year, I guess I should say, 6 years, you sow the land and reap crops off of it, and then the seventh year you let it rest. That takes 16% of our crop productivity. And by spending 7, 8, 9, 10% on chemical fertilizers, we can actually make a profit of an added 6%. Can you see that? Again, it's money. It isn't, you know, it's nothing personal, God. I mean, it's not that we don't like you. You know, we love you, God, and we go to church every Sunday. But when it comes to following your instructions, we're just a little smarter than you are, God. And so you need to understand that, you know, you're clear back in the Middle Ages or back in ancient times when it comes to modern technology. So man comes along and says, well, what we'll do is put chemical fertilizers on the ground. Now, what happens when you do this, for instance, we've been monitoring this for many years. Back in 1880 in Kansas, the protein content of wheat was 24%. Today it's 7 to 13%. Well, what happened to that protein content in the wheat? Well, you see, it just so happens that when crops grow or when plants grow, they can't get out of the soil more than what is in there. Just like your cow. You know, if your cow is eating alfalfa hay and this alfalfa hay is deficient in boron, then that cow is going to be deficient in boron because it's not in there. That's why a natural cow on natural range, she'll go out and she'll eat the plants that contain the boron. She'll balance her own diet. And then remember that calf, that saliva in the calf's mouth, as it touches the cow's teat, it gives off this enzyme and it triggers enzymes in the cow. Now get this. Here's the saliva on the calf's tongue touching the cow's teat, which sends a signal to the cow that this calf is deficient in boron or copper or iron or something else. And so the cow gets that message and she goes out and she eats plants that have boron or copper or iron. Whatever it is that calf needs, she'll eat. And that's what makes your milk bitter. See, that's what makes your milk change taste throughout the year, throughout her lactation, just like a beet. Oh my God, folks, the marvels of evolution. Huh? Think about that. Think about how just blind chance made the calf's saliva signal a sensor in the cow to eat the foods that the calf needs for its survival. Gotta tell you, the miracle of evolution just never ceases to amaze me. Tell you that. All right, now getting back here then to what's going on with the land, we farm the land and we never let it rest, so we mine it. It's like mining a coal seam. You know, at some point in time, it runs out. Now, when you let the land rest, then the decayed, let's just try it this way. The grass grows up and dies down. It decays. When it does, it gives off an acid called carbolic acid. Now, that comes from the roots of the plants. This carbolic acid then melts the inorganic material in the soil. It takes organic material to produce the food for the plant to live, to thrive, to produce the carbolic acid, which melts the inorganic elements in the soil, that is the sand, the rocks, and the minerals, and then takes those up in those roots into that plant and converts it to organic copper, organic iron, organic boron, which if it's inorganic, it's not assimilable into the organism. And so they come along and they sell us synthetic vitamins. Well, that's fine. They're not lying to you when they tell you that they're selling you multiple vitamins over here that contain copper. They're telling you the truth. It does. And it has about the same nutritional value as taking iron filings. I mean, you know, just go out here with a file. And just take a piece of a nail, stick it in your vise, and file off some filings, and then sprinkle that on your cornflakes and eat it. And you will be fortifying your diet with iron. Isn't that special? Okay. And it'll pass right through your body because your body cannot use those iron filings. Now, if you put those same iron filings out here on the ground, and then the plant takes those iron filings, and through the process of photosynthesis, here again, the miracle of evolution just bedazzles us all. And how that plant does this is kind of a mystery. We can observe it, and we see that it does it. We don't know exactly how the process developed, but it certainly couldn't have been created by a master designer. I mean, after all, you know, we believe in evolution here in America, don't we? And so this plant now takes it and converts this inorganic iron into organic iron. Now, if a cow comes along and she bites off that plant that's got this organic iron in it, and now her body takes this organic iron, converts it through the milk gland into milk, and then the calf gets this organic milk. This is why Eskimos are able to get vitamin C by eating walrus blubber. They didn't get it from tomatoes and oranges, boys and girls. Not up in the Northwest Territory. So those Eskimos are getting their vitamin C from animal sources, which we demonstrated here. I showed you this a couple of days ago. Now, we Americans, we're pretty crafty people, and we're interested in making a lot of money, like this oleomargarine thing. See, what we're really interested in is making money, and in the process, you know, if we kill a few people, well, that's the breaks of the game. So in Kansas, from 1880 to about 1950, we witnessed the continual decline in the protein content in the wheat. We never practiced land Sabbaths, but we put a lot of chemical fertilizers on the soil. Now, we still produce wheat in Kansas, but it's nutritionally deficient. Nutritionally deficient. And that's because it doesn't have vitamins and minerals and proteins, because the soil doesn't contain them to start with. So you can put a cow out there and eating that, and she cannot get enough protein. Well, a cow has to have 17% protein in order to milk. So, you know, just leave it to American agriculture and American business. We'll figure out a solution. We won't let the land rest. We won't practice land Sabbaths. We won't go back to the practices that would solve the problem naturally. So we come up with a solution. We kill a lot of cows, and there's a lot of offal that comes out of our Swift packing plants and so on. And it's a waste byproduct, and we need to do something with it. So we take all of that waste, you know, the hides and the hooves and the bones and the blood and the guts and, you know, and then the offal, everything that's in there, and we cook it down, because it's filled with protein. And then we feed that back to our cows and pigs and chickens and so on. And it's called bypass protein. Now we turn our cows into cannibals. This then leads to mad cow disease, which is transferable to humans in the form of Jacob's Creutzfeldt disease. Now remember, in the Bible, God told us, now you want to practice this land Sabbath. Now he didn't explain to us the science behind it. He just said once every 7 years you let your land rest. Well, we didn't understand God's instruction, but we did understand science. And we understood economics. We knew that if we let the land rest once every 7 years, it was going to cost us 16% of our productivity. So we decided that we would go ahead and produce 7 years out of seven. Then we noticed that the soil fertility went down. So we went to the chemical companies and we got chemical fertilizers. We noticed the protein content was going down. So we took the offal out of our packing plants and put that into the cattle feed. Now we noticed that the cattle feed produces mad cow disease. And that's where we are in 2005. Can you follow that, boys and girls? Now, had we followed God's instructions, we would have let the land rest every 7 years. The land would have continued to produce wheat at 24% protein. We would have lost 16% of our productivity, but we would have gained it back, because instead of eating foodless food, we would have 24% protein instead of 7 to 13% protein, which means then that we would have healthy bodies instead of sick bodies, which means that we would save it on health insurance, wouldn't we? And then those 40 million people who don't have health insurance wouldn't need it, because they don't get sick. And you wouldn't have Jacob's Creutzfeldt disease, and you wouldn't have mad cow disease. So you see, there's side effects that come from these broken laws. You go out here and you break one of these seemingly insignificant scriptural laws out of ignorance, and then it has a side effect, and then you have to treat the side effect, and then that, of course, has a side effect, which in turn has more side effects, and pretty soon you end up with milk that you can't digest. Pretty soon you end up with milk which has actually now been converted into a poison instead of a healthy, nutritious food. Now here again, you know, if you people want to drink pasteurized milk, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But I had a student the other day, I got to share this with you. He called and he moved here recently, close by, and he wanted to buy raw milk, so I started selling him raw milk. And about 3 months ago, we were still feeding hay, and the grass hadn't started to grow yet. And so the cow's milk has a particular taste to it. And then as spring comes on, the dock begins to grow and other nutrients, and these cows have calves normally in the spring. And as these cows are having calves and they're coming into milk, I put them out on natural pasture. And as the cow, you know, that calf sucking on the cow says to the cow, I've got to have more boron, more iron, more copper, more this or that, you know, through the saliva in the calf's tongue on the cow's teat, the cow goes out and she eats dock and burdock and other things over here, makes the milk bitter. And the guy called the other day and he says, my God, that milk is not fit to drink. We had to go to the store to buy milk. He never asked, why, oh, hey, Gordon, how come you drink bitter milk? Hey, how come this milk changes taste? What's going on here? He didn't ask, so I didn't tell him. He wants to buy his milk from the store. Well, see, when you people have your taste buds perverted by these manufactured foods, well, then you get used to that. And then the transition from these chemical foods back over to natural foods is such a shock to your system, you can't handle it. So I don't know. On the one hand, these manufactured foods are giving you these diseases which are killing you, and you can't eat the natural foods that you need to restore your health. So you're kind of caught between a rock and a hard spot, aren't you? I mean, it's a choice that you got to make. I've often said, you know, if God would have made Brussels sprouts and broccoli to taste like Snickers and Hershey candy bars, there wouldn't be any health crisis in America. I mean, we'd all be out here eating Brussels sprouts and broccoli. I'll share a little story here with you concerning hybridized seeds. In Leviticus 19, verse 19, there's an obscure statute, and it says, you shall not mingle your seed. Well, you know, every gardener knows that you can't plant two varieties of corn in the same row, or even close by. They have to be a quarter of a mile apart, otherwise they'll cross-pollinate. And you get what's known as a hybrid. Well, we discovered that with hybrids, we could make bigger plants. We could get more tons to the acre. You know, I've got a variety of open-pollinated blue corn called Indian blue corn. And this Indian blue corn matures in about 90 days instead of 120, and it has 16% protein. which is unheard of in corn. 16% protein. Well, listen to this. During World War II, our parents and grandparents, you know, planted victory gardens, and they helped to provide their own food and fiber for themselves and our country. Well, today, more than half of the food that we eat is imported from outside of our borders. Our food is being produced from hybrid seed that will not reproduce and is nutritionally deficient. Well, hybridization of seed makes hybrid plants, which are not as efficient, not as good at getting the nutrients out of the soil, even if the nutrients are in the soil. I mean, you can have all of the nutrients that these plants need in the soil, but if the seed is hybridized, it can't get all of them out of there. It doesn't get as much. Well, a fellow by the name of Adolf Steinbaum of Fairbanks, Iowa, put the matter in perspective by having samples of corn tested for nutrients that are usually added to commercial feeds. So when compared to more than 4,000 samples of hybrid corn tested in 10 Midwest states in the recent year, Adolf Steinbaum's open-pollinated corn contained 75% more crude protein, 875% more copper, 345% more iron, and 205% more manganese. The same result was also seen in the content of calcium, sodium, manganese, and zinc. And in the opinion of many ecologic farmers, hybrid seed merely masks poor farming practices by producing bins and bushels of foodless food without the nutrients that are really food's reason for being. You know, the reason that we drink milk, raw, unpasteurized milk, is to get the nutrients out of it, so that our bodies will have all of the nutrients that they need, so that our immune systems will be healthy and strong, so that we won't get muscular dystrophy, multiple sclerosis, or some other disease, degenerative or infectious. That's the purpose for eating good, healthy, nutritious food. That's putting the dots together. You know, we're drawing lines here from dot to dot. Now, in 1900, we were drinking raw milk. And in 2005, we're drinking pasteurized milk. In the intervening 100 years, the cancer rate has gone from 1 in 33 to 1 out of 2. Now, does that tell you something? It doesn't tell you that the milk causes cancer. It tells you that milk, along with not letting your land rest, along with hybridization of your food or your seed, you know, and then poisoning your ice cream with sorbate 80 and with antifreeze. You know, you put these poisons in your food, and then you devitalize your food, and over a period of time, like 100 years, you'll notice that there's a degeneration in the health of the people. And so the government jumps in and says, my God, everybody needs health insurance. What in the hell do you need health insurance for? The only people that need health insurance are sick people. I'm not sick. What the hell do I need health insurance for? Some guy says, well, you never know when you're going to get sick. Oh, yes, I know when I'm going to get sick. I'm going to get sick when I deprive my body of vitamin C. I'm going to get scurvy. When I deprive my body of vitamin D, I'm going to get rickets. When I deprive my body of whole raw milk, I'm going to get some degenerative disease. But I don't do that. When I hybridize my seed, I'm going to get nutritionless product back, which is going to cause disease and sickness. When I don't practice land Sabbaths and jubilees, I'm going to get sick, unhealthy plants, which in turn are going to produce sick, unhealthy bodies. I don't do that. Like I've said before, you know, you obey God and keep His commandments, and all of a sudden you don't have all these problems that everybody else has. Now, I'm not opposed to you people out there eating foodless foods. Hell, I like Krispy Kreme donuts, but I eat them in moderation. And I like coffee once in a while. And yes, I even eat a Hershey's candy bar from time to time, along with all the rat feces and the rat hairs and the insect bodies, you know, once in a while. But by and large, I eat raw avocados, and I eat oranges and whole raw milk, and I sow my garden with open pollinated seeds, and I let my land rest once every 7 years, and I lose that productivity. This year, 2005, is a land Sabbath year, by the way, for those of you that are curious. And so I'm not making any hay this year. Not making any hay. I'm letting all of my pasture just go to seed. And I'm just out there looking at it. You know, every day I go out and I look at the pasture and I notice that it's going to seed, and that's going to reseed the land, number one. The grass is going to grow up. It's going to die down. The cows are going to eat it and poop on the ground, and they're going to refertilize that land for the next 7 years. And you are going to benefit from that, because I'm going to stay healthy and wealthy and wise as a result of it. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here, if I can find it. Here it is. We're at the halfway point, and I have to remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio login schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And finally, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or the staff of this network or radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website, georgegordon.org, or call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Be sure to order your free general law CD package. Don't forget that. And you just click on to the email at our website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email for that free general law CD package. Or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about milk. The milk of human kindness is not pasteurized. Let me give you one last plug here for William Campbell Douglas, the author. And the book is called The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized. I would bet that for the six of you out there in the listening audience who'd like a copy of the book, there's probably six in America. And you can get those six books from your used bookstore by simply giving them the name of the book, The Milk of Human Kindness is Not Pasteurized. And then William Campbell Douglas, they'll plug that into their computer. They'll find a copy for you in Los Angeles, New York, or Philadelphia. And for probably $15 or $20, you'll probably get a copy. They were $14.95 when they were new in 1985. I don't know how I got a copy. Maybe Douglas gave me this copy of the book. I met him back in 85, 86. I think he gave me this copy. It's not autographed. Oftentimes, authors will give me their books and hope that I'll review them on the air. And sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. I've probably reviewed this book two or three times. So it's on our archives. And if it's not on the archives today, it's going to be tomorrow. So we're talking about butter, margarine issue, and it got to be an emotional issue back in the 1800s. And what they did was they came in with this butter substitute. Not that the butter that was being produced in the 1870s or 80s was all that safe, because remember that the people that were milking those cows were milking them by hand. If the milker had TB and coughed into the bucket that he was milking into, the TB germs went from the lungs of the TB carrier into the milk. The milk became a vehicle for spreading all kinds of infectious diseases, you know, like cholera and typhoid and TB and other diseases. Well, that was bad. So we had this dirty milk, and we had to do something about this dirty milk, which was causing infectious disease. So the solution was, well, you either pasteurize it, that is, kill all the pathogens in it, or clean up the milk supply. So cleaning up the milk supply takes a lot of work and effort, and pasteurizing the milk takes less, so we went to pasteurization. The pasteurization kills the good bacteria and enzymes, as well as the bad bacteria. And it takes a live, nutritious food and converts it into a dead food. And that's why we have disease, because we have dead food. Dead food. Most of the food, all this manufactured food, you know, the other night we had spaghetti. I like spaghetti, but it's dead food. There's no enzymes in that. So the enzymes that you get to digest this dead food has to come from some other live food source. So that means you've got to eat salad. That's why when you go to a restaurant, you eat salad and then you eat your dead food. There's a wild new concept among health food fanatics, of which about 12% of the people of America are health food nuts. That is, they buy their food out of health food stores and they avoid Kraft Singles and things like that, and Oreo cookies and on and on. Yeah, and they try to eat live foods, and so they drink juice. So if you have a juicer, or if you don't have one, you need one. And what you do is you take these vitamins, or these vegetables that are packed with vitamins and minerals, and you juice them because they're devitalized. You know, the carrots that are growing on devitalized soil don't have very much in the way of nutrients, as we see here from Adolf Steinbaum. They use hybrid carrot seed to get bigger carrots, to get more tonnage, and these bigger carrots have less food value. So you have to eat more of them. You'd have to eat 30 carrots to get as much nutrition as you could out of one glass of carrot juice. So what we do to make up for these devitalized foods and these hybridized vegetables, you juice them and then drink it. And then you drink a glass of carrot juice and you can get as much nutrition as you could from 30 carrots. But you can't eat 30 carrots, boys and girls. That's just way more than you're going to be able to, way more than you're going to be able to eat. Now, with a little help and a little practice, you can probably make some meaningful changes in your diet and restore your health. Colostrum, which is hard to come by now. That's the first milk out of the calf. I probably have a couple gallons here. I freeze it. Every time I have a cow come fresh, I take her colostrum and freeze it. Sometimes I need it for the calves, and sometimes I need it for the people. Every once in a while, I take a little shot of colostrum and replenish or revitalize the gut bacteria in my stomach. It invigorates me and gives me better digestive capacity. And for every member of our family, we do that every once in a while. And then we warm ourselves every once in a while here. It's a wild new crazy concept for you city people, I know, but we actually take walnuts, whole walnuts, put them in jars, fill it with vodka. Now, you know this has got to be good if it's filled with vodka. Let it sit 90 days, and it produces a tincture, and that tincture kills intestinal parasites. And if you kill the intestinal parasites that are consuming nutrients that you eat, and then you juice foods and you drink juices and you eat whole foods like whole raw milk, all of a sudden your health improves. I mean, you can get to be an old man like me, and you can actually be in good health. I saw Jack LaLanne the other day. He's a health food nut, 90 years old. Hell, I remember Jack LaLanne when I was a kid. He was on television when I was a kid. Now I'm 65. Jack LaLanne is 90. Jack LaLanne was 25 years old when I was born. Yeah, 25 years old when I was born. Jack LaLanne is probably in better health than I am, and he's 90. I'm not in bad health. I'm just telling you that he was on TV. Sometimes you wonder about these old guys, you know, you think about them, and you say, God, I remember an old guy was on TV when I was a kid out in California. Well, his name was Jack LaWanne, and just by coincidence, he was on somebody's TV program. And of course, he was spouting off, you know, about health and nutrition and exercise and diet and one thing and another. Like all those health food nuts do, we spout off a lot about health and nutrition and so on. Doesn't mean anything to most people, but there's a few of you out there, you know, that by the time you get sick, you know. Hey, here's a thought for you. Take a look in your concordance at the word milk. It's also known as M-I-L-C-H, milch. You might also look up kine, K-I-N-E, and you'll find that milk is mentioned 45 times in the Bible. Why don't you take a look at some of the contexts that God has used to describe milk? In Genesis 18, verse 8, this is the story of Melchizedek going over to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, stops for lunch over at Abraham's house, and they took butter and milk along with that calf that they killed, and they were sitting there eating the calf, and they were eating bread and butter and drinking milk. Isn't that just special? And I'll just bet you that that milk wasn't pasteurized. Then there's a statute in here that says you're not to see the kid on his mother's milk. See if I can find that. Exodus 34, 26, you shall not see the kid in his mother's milk. That's boiled milk. You'll see it also over here in Deuteronomy. Let's see here. Here it is. Deuteronomy 14:21. You shall not see the kid in his mother's milk. Now, that's mentioned twice. That's a statute. Sounds like don't drink boiled milk. Tuck that one away in your heart. And then butter. The word butter is mentioned in the Bible 11 times. I'll just flip over here. I got it marked 11 times. You'll see that statement again in Genesis 18, verse 8. He took butter and milk and the calf. And they ate it all at the same time. Jews, they don't like to do that, you know, because they've got this taboo. Well, God ate milk, butter, and meat all at the same time in the same meal, all in the same afternoon. I was on his way over to Sodom and Gomorrah when he was nuking them. So he wanted to eat lunch before he nuked Sodom and Gomorrah. All right, and then you'll find here many references to butter, such as Deuteronomy 32:14, butter of kine and milk of sheep. Judges 5:25, he brought forth butter in a lordly dish, and so on, 11 times. Now, it's against the law to eat animal fat, but yet butter is an exception to the rule. And the reason why? That butter has that enzyme. The enzyme. Remember that digestive enzyme that you got to have. Fat doesn't. Don't eat animal fat. Don't eat lard. That's not only animal fat, but it's also unclean animal fat. So you want to avoid that. Now in Leviticus chapter 11 and Deuteronomy chapter 14, you'll see a list of meat that you can eat and meat that you can't eat. I've covered that a time or two on vegetarianism. Vegetarianism is a doctrine of devils, so said God through the Apostle Paul in, I think it's 1 Timothy chapter 4, as I recall, something like that. Now, I'm not opposed to vegetarianism. We eat a lot of vegetarian meals here from time to time. In fact, too much meat is not good for you, and you ought not to eat unclean meat at all, period. And God gave us all of the green herbs. If you'll look at that in Genesis 1, verses 28 and verse 29, so I'm going to give you every green herb. That includes marijuana, opium poppies, and poke, and collard greens, and spinach, and all that. If it's green, God gave it to you. Now, that doesn't mean that all of them aren't poison, because, you know, there are some herbs out there that have poison, and those are called herbs, and you take those poisons, which, you know, if you take too much of it, it'll kill you. Like bloodroot, take too much, it'll kill you. And then there's a water hemlock, you take that, and it'll kill you. But, you know, those herbs taken in moderation, taken in small doses, they'll actually give you the vitamins and minerals that you need to tide you over from these various and sundry diseases. And that's what these naturopaths are all about. So naturopaths like Richard Schultz, you hear me, once in a while I'll put up a review of Schultz on. Well, he's a naturopathic doctor. He's the kind of guy that cures cancer. Now, most of you people want to cure cancer after you've been to the medical doctor and have cut off both breasts and taken out all your lymph system so that there's no hope of ever getting your immune system to work. If you have cancer, it's easy to cure. There's 9 cures to cancer. Easy to cure. I got to tell a story. You ever heard of Joel Wallach? You know, the dead doctors don't lie guy? Well, this guy, Joel Wallach, was working for some, I think, muscular dystrophy or multiple sclerosis or something like that. Well, he was a veterinarian. Now, veterinarians are trained in nutrition. Medical doctors aren't. Veterinarians are. And so one of the first things that we look at when a pig gets sick, what's he eating? And one time, we had a guy down here, he had a pig farm, and his pigs just fell over dead. Fat, healthy-looking pigs, and they fall over and die. Well, they found out that the protein content was a ConAgra ration, only had 5% protein. Pigs can't live on 5% protein, boys and girls, and milk cows can't milk on low-protein diets. They've got to have 17% protein. Pigs have to have at least 7 or 8%. So as soon as they found out that the cause of the pig's death was malnutrition protein deficiency, they boosted the protein content, and the pigs thrived. How simple that is. So nutrition makes the difference between life and death, sickness and disease. That's connecting the dots. If you're sick, I had a student the other day, he said, hey, I've got a very aggressive cavities coming into my teeth. I said, well, you're sick. You have a nutritional deficiency. In the first place that it shows up is in cavities in your teeth. Cavities in your teeth are caused by nutritional deficiencies. Okay. Well, Joel Wallach is working for this clinic or something. I don't know, in his younger days. He just wrote a book here recently, and I'm going to get that book, and I'll review it, and I'll give you more details. But I just got the review the other day, and Wallach discovered that what causes this muscular dystrophy, I think it's Indy, is a selenium deficiency. Just like the pigs, give them more protein, and they recover. Too low a protein content in their diet, they die. Scurvy, just, you know, you got scurvy, give them vitamin C. You got rickets, give them vitamin D. Got muscular dystrophy, give him selenium. And it cured it in monkeys. And so he said, well, look, here's the breakthrough that you're looking for. This is the way to cure muscular dystrophy. Here's the way to prevent it. And they fired him. And here again, it's for economic reasons. Just like we've been reading here in the butter or in the ice cream. It's just money. It doesn't have anything to do with your health. It's nothing personal. I mean, we're not giving you this ice cream, this poison, this crap, because we don't like you people. We love you. And we want you to buy lots of our ice cream. It's just that, as I explained to you last time when we were talking about ice cream, or the time before, I forget which program it was, 5, 6, or 7, but let's just take a look at cherry flavor. If we use natural cherry flavor in a gallon of ice cream, it costs 35 cents. If we use artificial chemicals, if we use coal tar and dye that's derived from a manufacturing process that comes out of a chemical factory, it costs 7 cents a gallon. So look, boys and girls, it's nothing personal, but we make, you know, we make an added extra profit off of each gallon of gasoline or of ice cream, you know. Whether it's gasoline or ice cream, it's a manufactured chemical product. And we make more money by using the artificial ingredients. And so the cheaper the product that we make, the more sugar and additives we put into it, the more chocolate to cover up the deficiencies, the better you like it. Like the guy I told you about with the milk. He likes store-bought milk better because it's a uniform product. He can't stand natural raw milk, the taste of the natural raw milk. He can't handle that. His kids just rebel. I suggest to the guy that you put a little Ovaltine into it. Put a little Ovaltine in. And it'll cover up that bitter taste. It'll cover up that milk taste. It's just something you don't like. It's kind of like colostrum. You know, the thought of drinking this first milk, this colostrum, you know, it's enough to gag a maggot. But if you put a little instant coffee into it, mix it 50-50, you know, with some milk, and stir it up, stick it in the blender maybe, put in a banana or something like that, and drink it as a smoothie, hell, it goes down easy. And you're getting all this bacteria down in your gut, which is what makes you healthy. Now, sometimes this health food is hard to palate. You know, like, remember the first time they were trying to feed me this carrot juice, you know, I almost puked. Now, you take some guy off of chemicals, cold turkey, and you feed him, you know, straight carrot juice right out of the health food bar. I mean, if you see this guy over in the corner just puking his guts out, you know, it's not because he's hungover, because he's been drinking down at O'Leary's or down at the Blue Room. It's because he's consuming healthy, nutritious food the way God designed it. And most Americans can't handle real food. So don't just go cold turkey, you know, off of Krispy Kremes and coffee onto carrot juice and wheatgrass. It'll kill you. You city people can't handle it. Now, for the rest of us out here, you go on to this kind of slow and easy. You know, it's like trying to get off of heroin. You know, you're trying to kick a bad habit, and you're addicted to sugar. Now, sugar is a drug. Sugar. It's manufactured chemical sucrose. This stuff is bad for you. This stuff gives you ADHD. It makes you bounce off the ceiling and fly off the chandeliers. Turns kids into chimpanzees and monkeys. And when you're trying to come down off of these chemical foods over here, you have to do that slow and easy. So you start on with eating some healthy, nutritious food a little bit at a time. It's kind of like I tell my students over here, don't try to practice the Ten Commandments cold turkey coming out of the chute. You'll never succeed. What you do is you take on one at a time. You stop killing people, number one. Kind of like old Doc Lester. You know, he was a medical doctor. And he said to me, he said, the reason that I quit medical practice is because I was killing too many people. So if you stop, if you'll start with that commandment, thou shalt not kill, you know, that you shall do no murder, and you start there. It isn't something that you have to do. It's just something that you quit doing, you know, slow and easy. Now, it's going to cut into your profits, all you doctors and medical people out there. It'll cut into your profits, and then you have to make up that with something else. And so old Doc Lester, he went on to naturopathy. He got into cancer therapy. That's all he specialized in for 30 years, cancer. And I don't know how many patients he had, but it was in the thousands over 30 years. From 1957, 67, 77, 87, 30 years, when I met him, 1987, Lester told me he lost one patient to cancer. Now, prior to his training as a naturopathy guy, he was treating cancer patients and lost nearly all of them. He said medical science does not know how to cure cancer. In fact, any medical doctor will tell you that. They'll tell you, we don't know what causes cancer and we don't know how to cure it, but for $100,000, we've got a hell of a treatment program. We can keep you alive for 18 months for $100,000. Now, I don't know about you, but if I took my car into a garage and the mechanic said, I don't know what's wrong with your car and I don't know how to fix it, but for $25 an hour, I'll sit here and tinker with it until you run out of money. I don't think I'd take my car to that mechanic, and I can't for the life of me understand why people would want to go to a medical doctor that tells them plainly, I don't know what causes cancer, I don't know how to cure it, but boy, have we got a treatment until you run out of money. Kind of reminds me of that woman, you know, that had an issue of blood, probably leukemia, and she touched the Messiah's hem of his garment, and she was healed. Do you remember that story? She'd been to the physicians, until she ran out of money. Now, when you run out of money or your insurance is canceled, the doctors don't want to talk to you anymore. Have you noticed that? Do you know that people that get cancer that don't have insurance live longer than people that get cancer and do have insurance? People that have insurance go to medical doctors and it kills them. The average lifespan, if you come down with cancer and do absolutely nothing about it, just leave it alone, you'll live longer than 5 years. And if you treat it aggressively, you'll live 18 months. You know, it's up to you. Now, if you want to cure it, you can do that too. Cancer is curable. You know, these medical doctors are not the guys that you want to go to. They tell you it's incurable. And if you believe that, it's true. You know, if you believe it. Now, if you didn't believe that and you went to a naturopath, he'd cure your cancer for you. And this guy, Joel Wallach, is one of those. You can probably find Wallach on the website somewhere. It's spelled W-A-L-L-A-C-H. Try punching in "Dead Doctors Don't Lie." That's probably his most famous byline. "Dead Doctors Don't Lie." He took a line. He's a medical doctor, and so is his wife. He's married. He has a wife. She's a medical doctor. He was a veterinarian. He became a medical doctor. And what a neat combination that is. He knows what causes disease, and he knows how to cure it. He knows how to treat it and make a lot of money. He knows how to cure it. Curing disease doesn't make very much money. Treating disease makes lots of money. Wallach can cure it. And he does it through nutrition. He'll just tell you very, very plainly. Well, anyway, in the final few seconds here, he did some research and he found out that medical doctors die on average at age 58. 58. The average medical doctor trained in our medical schools dies at age 58. The average guy in our society, truck drivers and plumbers and carpenters and electricians and the rest of us, we die at age 75. Now, how come these medical doctors with all of their drugs and potents and medical knowledge die so young? Huh? And so Wallach put out an audio tape is what I've got, and it says, "Dead doctors don't lie," and then he goes on and tells you for about an hour why that is. Well, we're about out of time. It's been a pleasure being with you, boys and girls. Hope you get a copy of the book, The Milk of Human Kindness Is Not Pasteurized. William Campbell Douglas is the guy that wrote it, dynamite book. I think if you follow the information in there, it'll probably save your life. Well, we got to close with this reminder. You know, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. So don't blame this on the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of the local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, just go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call the Law School Direct, 417-273-4967. Remember, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events. We do that 7 days a week. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.